Welcome to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Twardock. The Alaska Fellows Program matches young people with professional positions in Alaska, helping attract and keep their energy and expertise in Alaska. Many of the fellows focus on outdoor-related fields such as tourism, outdoor education, and conservation. Coming up, I'm joined by Alaska Fellows Executive Director Tina Buxbaum, Fellow Amelia Lamont, and Fellow Cameron Umack. Join us as we learn more about the program and the adventures they experienced this past year. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer. Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Twardock, and we are learning about the Alaska Fellows Program. I have Amelia Lamont with me in the studio, and Tina Buxbaum and Cameron Umack on Zoom with me. Amelia and Cameron just finished up their fellowship, and Tina is the executive director of the program. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tina, let's start with you as executive director. Tell us about the program, its history, and what's it all about?
Yeah, well, thank you. As you mentioned, I am the executive director of the Alaska Fellows Program, and I have been for about the last 5 years. And AFP, as we like to call it for short, is a 9-month residential fellowship program intended for recent college graduates. And by recent, I mean generally fellows are just done with their undergrad education to 2, 3, 4 years out. So really that early career stage where you're trying to figure out what you're doing post-graduation. And so the goal of the program and really what AFP envisions in the state is these pathways for young talent within the state, both homegrown and also from outside who have moved to Alaska, to really have these pathways into the nonprofit sphere within the state and really to help grow the young leadership capacity within the state. And we do this through these 9-month fellowships where AFP partners with nonprofit and public sector organizations. And these organizations host the fellows for 9 months, and the fellows are there. They're learning and working in the professional environment, and they have professional mentors there, and they're really having this professional growth experience. At the same time, fellows live together in program housing with all of the other fellows, and so they're really learning and growing and having this this personal growth experience at the same time. The program is currently in 4 different communities within the state of Alaska: Sitka, Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks. And there are this last cohort just finished May 31st and graduated 35 fellows from that cohort. And the next cohort will start September 1. And so we have 35 young emerging leaders that go through the program every single year. A little bit of history of the program. We are just completed, I think, our 11th year full program. It started initially in Sitka in 2014, expanded to Anchorage in 2017, Juneau in 2018, and then with a year delay because of COVID, expanded into Fairbanks in 2021 in its current configuration. Some kind of long-term statistics about the program. This year, we have almost 300 alumni over the decade or so of the program. They come from over 40 different states. We also have an international alumni from 7 or 8 different countries. So it's really, really diverse participation in the program. For retention, about 70 to 80% of fellows stay for the summer afterwards. We kind of tease how great Alaska is, where they start September 1st, and we talk about how wonderful the summer is, and then they survive the winter, and then they end right at the end of May when summer's just starting, and it's kind of the tease of what's to come. So a lot of them try to stay for the summer, and we really help facilitate that to best possible. And then about 40 to 45% retention rate for a year or more in the program, which is, I think, a pretty good retention rate for keeping young people within the state.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my interest in this, doing this program was a little bit about, there's a lot of talk about sort of out-migration and retaining young people. And it seems like this program is sort of an example of something that is an antidote to that. Does that sound right?
Yeah, totally. Trying to both, you know, keep young Alaskans in the state, bring them back if they've left for school and they're trying to find a pathway back into the state, and then also, you know, to fight the out-migration by bringing other young emergent leaders into the state to really find their networks and find their home here and thrive here in the state.
Can you give an example of some of the different fellowships there are?
Yeah, it's super diverse. Like I said a little bit ago, our only criteria for host organizations is they have to be either nonprofits, public sectors, so like municipalities and things like that. And we do work with Native nonprofits or Native for-profits, so like Sea Alaska and TCC, though TCC is a nonprofit branch in here in Fairbanks. But yeah, the positions range all the way from like Amelia's role was working with the Alaska Travel Industry Association, I think if I got it right, ATIA, working with helping with green tourism and really helping launch one of their green tourism programs. Cameron's role was working directly with youth through the Alaska Center, running camps and really being directly direct service into the youth world. We have roles. We have one in Fairbanks that was looking at using glacial soil as part of a soil amendment for carbon sequestration and with kelp farming. I mean, it was all complicated trying to do work in carbon sequestration. We have direct service. We have a fellow that's doing direct service with Sitka Counseling in Sitka, working directly with clients. So it's really... there's a really, really, really broad spectrum of different roles, which I think is part of what makes the program so unique and also part of what makes the home environment unique, because you have fellows with different education backgrounds and different work environments all coming together in the same house. So there's a lot of learning and cross-pollination across the roles within the houses.
Yeah, I was looking at your website, and you have a newsletter that I think you all might have helped put together of all the different fellows, and it was very impressive, the number of them and the variety, like we said, everything from outdoor stuff, which is an outdoor show, to economic things, to tribal stuff. I mean, all over the board. It's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. Totally. And the roles change every year. We have some hosts that are pretty consistent and are part of the program every year. But we also have quite a few that change out every year. Sometimes they have different needs within the host, so it'll be the same host, but a different type of role. Other times, fellows get hired into their host organization, and then that capacity bump that the host had initially becomes a long-term capacity increase. Like Cameron was hired by the Alaska Center, one of their youth programs. So it's there's a lot of variety, and I think that it really keeps the program fresh, and it helps really keep it engaging every year.
Congratulations, Cameron, for the job.
Thank you.
Yeah. I guess my other question, Tina, is are fellows in the application process, how does the application process work? Are they applying specifically for a particular fellow or a particular location? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So I work with all of the host organizations before the application for fellows opens, and hosts write a position description. So they describe what the role with them will be. They have to designate a mentor that will be working with the fellow. And then once it comes for the fellow applications, there's some questions around communal living and things like that that are reviewed internally by AFP to make sure that the people living in the houses come in with the best intentions. And then the host organizations, well, the applicants get to pick which host organizations and which roles they're interested in. And then those host organizations review those particular applicant materials and they make their final selection. Because the roles are so different, there's no way that I could accurately evaluate applicants for the fit into each specific role. I would make terrible matches. So I make sure that the applicant has opted into the role that they're interested in, and then the host has opted into the applicant that they're interested in.
Sounds a little complicated, but yeah.
Yeah, a little, it works. It takes a
Good.
little while as the current applicant group is finding out, it usually takes a couple of months to get through the whole process, but it works.
And so that application period for this coming year, that'll be this coming fall, that's over, right? You're reviewing applicants now.
Yep. We are in the mid to latter stages of reviewing applicants right now. A lot of the roles have already, the hosts have selected their fellows and fellows have been committed. But there's a few roles that are still recruiting, but in general, we're kind of in the latter stages. And I like to, summers are so crazy, both within Alaska and also outside when these guys are finishing college and stuff like that, that I really try to get most of the selection process done before everyone's into the summer crazies.
Yeah. So a question for Cameron and Familia. What was your experience in applying? I'm looking at Amelia here.
Okay,
I,
I
yeah,
can go
yeah, yeah,
first.
yeah.
Yeah, mine's kind of a long story. Originally, I was looking, I had no idea what I wanted to do post grad, and I was looking at some seasonal jobs up in Alaska, really interested in glaciers. And so I was pretty heavily considering working on as a glacial tour guide, on the Matanuska Glacier. And one of my friends knew that I was interested in coming up to Alaska and working in a seasonal job. And she was very tapped into the post-grad fellowship world. It's like this whole world that I was didn't really know about, but there are a million different fellowships to do post-grad, and she knew all of them.
Fun.
And we were in the library, and she was looking at the AFP website and the application, and she realized that like none of the positions really aligned with her interests, but she was like, Amelia, you would love so many of these, and I think you would really like this program. So that's how I found out about it. It was just word of mouth through a friend. And I knew I've always been really passionate about sustainability, but I knew I wanted my career to be related to that, but I didn't know exactly in what capacity because sustainability is such a broad term, and there are so many different fields where you can contribute. And so I applied to just kind of cast a broad net. I really liked that the Alaska Fellow Program had a lot of environmental related positions, from anything from what Cameron's doing with the Alaska Center to what ended up being my position as a sustainable tourism fellow at the Alaska Travel Industry Association. And yeah, so that's, I just applied to a bunch of
All
positions.
right, excellent. And Cameron, how about your experience in applying?
Yeah, mine was a bit similar of hearing through the program through word of mouth. I was really looking for mentorship in a professional sense. I was working at the Grand Canyon for the Park Service beforehand and had gotten started in that also through a early careers kind of program focused on that mentorship and growing. So was really excited to find something similar to that. And yeah, found this program through other friends talking about their experience and yeah, this fellowship world that Amelia is talking about. And yeah, I just sat down. I really liked the emphasis on the community and communal living. And we wrote a bunch of short essay questions and then you write like your cover letters for each position that you're applying to. So it was exciting to be able to look at so many different positions available and then be able to choose a handful of them to apply directly to.
And it worked out. Good. Tina, so they apply, they're accepted. What are the benefits? So, what about, I mean, I think about logistics, so benefits and housing and all that stuff. How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So they do all receive a living stipend, every month as part of the program. It's not huge. Generally, it covers, food and incidentals and things like that. You're definitely not going to be saving money. And the program is, I try to make sure the applicants understand that the program is a service program. So you are kind of foregoing that, get out of college, get a corporate job, make a bunch of money for this experience of, being in Alaska, being with a mentor, living together with other fellows. So there's kind of that trade-off. But as part of the program, you get a living stipend every month. Housing, utilities, all of that is provided while you're in the program, so you don't have to worry about rent or electricity or any of that kind of stuff. In Fairbanks and Anchorage, where the communities are very, very car-based, we provide cars in those
Oh,
communities that the
wow.
fellows
That's
share
right. Yeah.
amongst themselves. Yep. So they are insured and they have the cars during the course of the program. And then there's opening and closing all sites convenings, where all four sites come together at the beginning and at the end, as really as a chance to make those cross connections across the state, and to have this experience together. And then each site also has site-specific opening and closing retreats. The opening one is really focused around having community conversations and starting to build that community within your cohort. The one at the end is generally for kind of celebrating the end of the program. And there's some variation within the program depending on what the sites want or what's going on. So that's all funded entirely by the program. There's also a professional development fund that fellows can apply for that usually involves me getting them a plane ticket somewhere to go to a conference or to go to a training or to do something that would benefit them. And then there's Zoom sessions and different kind of opportunities throughout the program. And so beyond that, really like concrete stuff, we really help plug the fellows into our alumni network, into our board, into supportive community members. So there's all sorts of opportunities to go to this event or house sit for somebody here or make these intangible connections within the community that really help you figure out your next steps and figure out where you fit within the broader community, and really to help embed the fellows within the broader community that they're living in.
You just caught my ear, house sitting. Yeah, I'm always looking for house
Yes.
sitters. Yeah, especially
Always,
right in
they're
the
always looking to house sit.
middle of winter when we all go to wherever, Hawaii or wherever. It's like, yep, house sitting.
Totally,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. Well, great. And it sounds like, and you have a lot of applicants.
We do. This year we've had the most I think I've ever had. I have 290
Wow.
some this year for the 37 roles that I'll have. So,
Wow. So that's great. And how's the program funded?
It is funded primarily as a fee-for-service program. So there is the hosts pay a fee to participate in the program. And that's the main source of our funding. And outside of that, it's a little bit of like philanthropic giving from alumni networks or community supporters and things like that. And then a small amount of grant writing that kind of fills in the cracks for other things, or provides a little bit of bump here and there. So.
Excellent. You are listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm here with Paul Tordak. We're talking about the Alaska Fellows Program. I have Amelia Lamont, Cameron Umack, and Tina Buxbaum with me talking about the program. And we'll have more information about the program on the Outdoor Explorer website. So, what a great thing. So, Amelia and Cameron, let's talk about your experience. You talked about applying. Cameron, let's start with you. Where are you from? Why'd you pick Alaska?
Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco, California. I loved it there. And why Alaska? It's a good question. I was just open to seeing what else is out there. Growing up in San Francisco, it's a city, but it's a geographically small city with a lot of access to going to the beach and getting out into the hills and the forests all around. So I love that combination of kind of outdoor access and the arts and culture and diversity of the city and all of the events going on. I went to school in central Vermont, so very different small town, a lot quieter, a little bit of a different pace, and then spent some time in other places kind of in between then. So coming from especially the Grand Canyon, really small community, only 50 people. The only activities were hiking, which was awesome. It was great access. So I was excited to come to Anchorage, where there's still that really great hiking access. There's the strong connection to the land and being outside, while also the amenities of a city and being able to access a nearby grocery store and go to the museum and try different restaurants.
Nice. And you picked Alaska Center. Was that the only one you applied for, and why them?
Yeah, I think I applied to one position in each site location, just open to whatever would come my way. But I'm really grateful to have been at the Alaska Center and still there now. This was, I think, environmental education and youth leadership fellow position. So working with the two programs, youth programs of the Alaska Center. There's one called Trailside Discovery Camp, where there's an after-school program every day at Winterberry Charter School for outdoor education, and then a high school youth leadership program for environmental action. And since probably the middle of college, I've been really interested in more environmental education, working with youth outside to help them develop their sense of place and their connection to the land and help build their stewardship of it. So I was excited to be able to work with a wide age range too, and kind of figure out which group do I work better with, which do I enjoy more, what are the skills required to work with various ages. And then also with especially the high school program, it's called Alaska Youth for Environmental Action, or AYA, being exposed to more organizing and advocacy work with the youth. They're all incredible, inspiring young leaders that are really engaged in their communities. So learning alongside them how to navigate the state legislature and keep taking action in their communities was really, really meaningful.
And what I think we'll stick with you, Cameron, because I know you have to leave early here. What'd you learn? Like, what were some of the things that you learned out of this experience?
Yeah, I think so many different things that I've learned over the last year-ish. I think one thing that I've learned is that Alaska is super small in one sense. Everyone kind of knows everyone. And I was so surprised in my first few months when people would point out, like, oh, that person's a state representative, or yep, there's the mayor right there. It has made, especially in working with the high schoolers, it has made government and being able to be engaged a lot more accessible than, especially growing up in California, such a big state, so many people. I never knew too much about our state government. I didn't have that engagement. But here, I know some of our youth are on first name basis with some of their representatives and their leaders, which I think is really incredible. And also, in a community sense, it's small that people know each other, people are super generous and giving in their knowledge, in their recommendations, in their gear, as we were saying, in their houses and their cars, letting people borrow things. That's something I've really appreciated, that there are all these statewide connections, all these connections within a certain place that we're able to kind of tap into. And I appreciate that of the program of encouraging us to do that, to get involved.
Yeah, and it seems like that I'll throw this out to any of you that that is a probably a big part of this program is making those connections and networking. Am I right?
Definitely.
And sort of how did you all do that as a cohort?
Yeah, I think to start, those retreats were really helpful. We had a local Anchorage site retreat at the start of the program, so that kind of opened up the conversations for us, start building those relationships of what do we want our house to look like? What do chores look like? How are we spending time together? Early on, especially in the fall time, we had some nice group hikes where it was open for anyone to join. No pressure to do anything you didn't want to do, but that was just long days together of being able to talk and explore a new place together. Lots of communal meals. And the program encourages Sunday dinners. So every Sunday throughout the entire fellowship, we got together, one house hosting and making dinner for everyone. That's a really good time to just check in after the whole week and see everyone in one place. And then an assortment of activities throughout the winter. And like Amelia and I went ice skating and skiing a bunch and rock climbing at the gym. Just being able to try new things together, I think was a big part of kind of that bonding.
What, Cameron, what was your highlight of the summer, or not of the summer, of the winter, fall and winter, I guess, in Alaska?
That's a really good question. I think highlight would be the accessibility of so many new winter sports to me. Being able to just walk out the front door basically and get skiing on the Chester Creek and coastal trails and hop on Westchester Lagoon. I'd never really cross country skied or ice skated before, and that just became an almost daily activity with friends.
And did you have any encounters with wildlife? Was that, did you run into a moose or yeah? It's always something what's pretty unique for Anchorage, right? This urban wildlife interface.
Yeah, not too many too close encounters, which I'm grateful for, but definitely seeing some moose, seeing moose too closely while not really looking up. A few bears. Bears are definitely coming out more too. But yeah, there was one. I was biking home from work and I was like, what is that guy looking at? And it was just a bear around the corner,
Oh, fun.
on Ship Creek Trail.
Yeah.
I texted my family that, and they're just like, "What? What's happening in your life? What's going on
Do
over there?"
you think, and I'll Cameron or Amelia, you can answer that question. Do you think your attitude toward risk has changed since you've been in Alaska? An outdoor risk?
That's a really good question. I think that, definitely. But not maybe not in the way that you think. I think I came growing up on the East Coast, and I also spent a lot of time in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan because that's where my dad's family is from. There weren't that many outdoor risks, and so I used to kind of go outside. I spent a lot of time outside growing up, but I would never be that prepared for anything that serious. And I think during my time in Alaska, I've become a little bit more risk averse,
Oh,
which
interesting.
is,
Oh,
I think I was very naive, and when I was coming here, and I've learned that you do have to prepare for outdoor adventures and make sure that you have the right gear. I had some like cross-country ski hut-to-hut trips where I did not have the right sleeping bag, and that was those were long nights and cold nights, and so I think I'm still kind of taking the same risks, but I've learned to be more prepared for them.
That sort of idea of risk. I think we're gonna go to our break now. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the Alaska Fellows Program, and we'll be right back with more of the program.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about the Alaska Fellows Program. Let's see, Cameron, let's talk a bit about a little bit more about your experience. Amelia was talking about risk. I'm sort of curious about your experience in the outdoors and how Alaska's changed your perception of what you can or can't do in the outdoors, and also a little bit about did you get better at dealing with the cold and other discomforts?
Yeah, definitely. This is probably the coldest environment I've lived in before. And something that was really helpful in being able to get through that and lean into the discomfort was spending time with youth outside. Every week, I was spending hours outside with young kids, early elementary to early middle schoolers, and seeing them all bundled up, having the right gear to be able to spend time outside was just really inspiring. And seeing them, I was like, if a 5-year-old can be doing this, I can be doing this. You know, like I just need to bundle up and lean into having fun on the ice and on the snow. It doesn't matter that it's dark. We can still be outside and having fun. But it definitely was kind of a mental challenge to pick yourself up after work and get outside and put on all of those layers. But I remember there was one evening, Amelia and I went skiing, and it was super helpful that there are so many lights on trails and the trails are so well taken care of in Anchorage itself, which is really nice. But we had our headlamps, we went skiing, and we were like, oh, this is awesome. It's actually no big deal at all that it's completely dark out, that it's really chilly. We can still be having fun and getting active and being social. So I think my tolerance has definitely gone up for discomfort, especially in the cold and in the darkness. And yeah, being able to see the ways that especially kids growing up here are able to lean into that, and they don't mind it at all when it, especially over the winter holidays when it was really chilly in Anchorage, they were still so excited to be sledding on the ice when it hadn't snowed in too long. So seeing that and being able to kind of share that joy with them helped me in just personal life and being
Yeah.
able to get out.
It's great to be inspired by those kids, and they're having so much fun. And so, before you, I know you have to take off here for a work meeting, Cameron. And what's next for you? You're working, continuing to work for the Alaska Center, is that right? You got a job out of this?
Yes, I am working with Alaska Youth for Environmental Action, AYA. It's our high school youth leadership program. So this year especially, we're focusing on workshops, being able to connect with youth from across the state and provide workshops in their own communities, as a way to kind of meet people more so where they are and get to know their homes more. And then we also put on 2 summits in the year. There's one in the fall focused on youth organizer skills and building that statewide network for youth leaders. And then one in the spring, which is in Juneau, and it's focused on civic engagement and advocacy. So everyone heads to the Capitol building, speaks with their legislators, and a lot of people can testify for bills that they feel passionate about. This year, they put on a film screening of all of the different films they made about climate change impacts in their communities. And then throughout the year, we have local chapters. So I have been working with the local Anchorage group. This is teens from across different high schools in the city that are organizing. They're working on climate change legislation and kind of community engagement in raising awareness about climate change. So I'm super grateful to have transitioned from the fellowship program into more long-term working with this program and keep diving into organizing across the state.
And last question for you, kind of before I take off, any big Alaska adventures planned this summer? For
Yeah,
summer, right?
lots going on this
Yeah.
summer. I just came back from a workshop in Gamble on St. Lawrence Island.
Oh, fun.
So it was really beautiful. It was really amazing to just be able to meet so many people, and I'm grateful for them sharing about their island and their place and their people. And yeah, heading to Cordova next week. So I'm excited to get on the ferry
Wow,
as
so you're
well.
getting to see the whole state. Yeah, that's great. Well, Cameron, I know you have to leave, so thanks for joining us. We'll continue on here. We've been talking with Cameron Umack with the Alaska Fellow Program. So good luck, Cameron.
Thank you.
Yep. So now I'm looking at our next fellow here is Amelia. So Amelia, again, we talked a little bit about the application process and how you ended up here. Tell us a little, you came from DC, is that right?
Yeah, I came from DC, but as I mentioned previously, I grew up spending a lot of time with my grandparents in the Upper Peninsula of
Yep.
Michigan in a very, very remote place up there. And so I loved spending time outside. I've always loved the outdoors. And I came to Alaska for its access to the outdoors, kind of similar to Cameron.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And were you a skier? I mean, is that something you did in the UP?
No, I had downhill skied a little bit growing up, but I was not a big cross-country skier until coming up here. I think a lot of the fellows, we had never skied before. We got gear from people had loaned us skis, or the Alaska Center actually let us borrow their gear that they use for their summer camps and their winter camps as well, as long as we just returned it for the winter break camp. And so that was awesome. So we kind of just cobbled together enough gear and taught ourselves or had people teach us how to ski. And that was a great learning experience. And it really did help get us through the winter, I think.
That was one of my questions. What were your recommendations for a new person in Alaska, how to deal with the dark and the cold?
Yeah, I think getting outside, one of the things that I really learned is that you have to get outside and move, even if it's cold, figure out ways to do that, be it skiing. Anchorage specifically has so many, as Cameron mentioned this, but so many groomed trails and lit trails, and that's such a unique resource that it's easy to take for granted, but yep. I really appreciated that. And I love to ice skate. So just getting out sometimes in the middle of the day, on my lunch break, I would go, and my office is kind of near Cuddy Park, and there's a little skating ribbon. And so I would just go out and skate a little bit, get some sunlight while you can. And then we also, for days that were very cold or it was dark and we didn't feel like getting outside, we also got a household membership at the Alaska Rock Gym.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Which really, really helped with the winter. I had also never rock climbed before, or I had tried it a few times and actually despised it.
Oh, interesting, huh?
But I'm terrified of heights, and so I'm not naturally inclined to love rock climbing, but I got peer pressured into joining and have very quickly fell in love with it. And it was a great place to have kind of social interactions and move your body and get to know other people from around Anchorage. So that was very helpful as well.
So how did you learn how to rock climb? Did they take classes? I mean, it's not like you just go skiing, you stop on skis and figure it out. There's a little more risk there.
Yeah. And so I was mostly bouldering. And Cameron had more experience bouldering than I did. And she kind of taught us some of the basics, and I watched some, they offer classes. I just never took one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was like varying skill level within the group and within the cohort. And so people would teach each other skills, and tricks and basics. And I watched some videos about it and just kind of picked it up.
Yeah. Oh, fun.
Yeah. I'm no expert, but it's a fun little hobby.
Right. Now, you worked for, what was your position and what did you do and who was it with?
I was the Sustainable Tourism Fellow for the Alaska Travel Industry Association, which involved managing the Adventure Green Alaska program, which is a really cool and unique program to the state of Alaska. It's a statewide sustainable tourism certification program. And so businesses will apply and we evaluate them on sustainable management, environmental sustainability, their benefit to local communities and economies, as well as how well they preserve and present Alaska's culture and history. And we're the only, Alaska's the only state that has a program like this, so it's super unique. And it was a really great opportunity to, so early on in my career, have program management opportunities like I did in this position.
And when you mean management, like you're running the program?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's, I had help from my supervisor, Jeff, as well as other people who had kind of had more historical knowledge on the program because it's been running since 2009. But one of the reasons why they got a fellow is because people had been kind of working or supporting the Adventure Green Alaska program on the side of their other main jobs at ATIA, And they wanted someone totally dedicated to running the program. And so that meant that I had help with some other, like when I had questions or needed information, I could ask questions, but I was pretty much in charge of running it.
Wow. And so describe that program to us. Like people, businesses apply, mm-hmm. right? And so what kind of businesses, what's an example of a business?
We have anything from very, very small mom and pop, you know, guiding companies, hiking guides, like Alaska Nature Guides in Talkeetna. They have two full-time employees and it's just a couple, mm-hmm. that a married couple running it. And it's very, very small businesses to large companies like Holland America Princess.
Oh, wow.
Huge, so it really runs company. The gamut.
That's huge. Yeah. That is the whole gamut.
Yeah. And we have about 130 businesses.
And are there, do they have to qualify? Are there requirements?
Yeah. So there are kind of baseline score requirements across those four categories that I mentioned. And then there's an essay section where they can expand on them. And then every 2 years they have to renew their certification so that we make sure that they're continuously improving.
Yeah. Huh. And are you inspecting them? Is it like at some place like Holland America, that's huge. Like how do you judge them? You
know, yeah. So right now there's no official audits.
Yeah.
So we don't, for Holland America, they're certified certain lodges that they have that they're operating are certified.
Yeah.
So it's not the whole company. It's just their like Alaska operations.
Gotcha.
So that makes it easier.
Yeah. And do you know how many companies have this or how many
in Alaska?
Yeah.
I think the exact number is 121.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, really good. And so how would I know a company, why are they doing this, for instance? And is it a marketing thing?
Yeah, it's actually the majority. Part of my fellowship was working with the Coraggio Group, and which is an outside consultant, and we were conducting a research project on the program itself and how to improve the program, potentially implementing a tiered system of certification, because right now it's just entry level. And part of this research project was asking businesses why they're involved in it. And the vast majority said not because of the marketing opportunities, but really because it's the right thing to do. And so they feel like they should be operating sustainably and demonstrate that they're operating sustainably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Huh. Yeah. And you can find AGA certified businesses by going to the Adventure Green Alaska website. So it's adventuregreenalaska.org. And you can also look for the AGA seal. There's a little seal that businesses will display on their website.
Excellent. Well, we'll have that link on the Outdoor Explorer webpage, on the show's webpage. What did you learn through all this? It sounds pretty serious. Like you're doing Holland America and all these companies and... Yeah. So what did you learn from the whole thing?
I think there's so much I learned. One of my biggest takeaways is it's really important to be able to just be able to pick up the phone and call someone, and being able to talk with people and connect with people is a very important career skill that's very important to hone early on in your career and have.
Phone calls. People still use phones.
People still use phones. And it was always easier to, when I was trying to ask a question or figure something out, it was so much easier to just pick up the phone and call them.
Love it.
So bring back phone calls.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer in Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Twardock. We are talking about the Alaska Fellows Program with Tina Buxbaum, who's the executive director, and Amelia Lamont, who was one of the fellows just finished up. And Amelia was with the Alaska Tourism Industry Association?
The Alaska Travel Industry
Alaska
Association.
Travel Industry, yep. I should know that. So you had this job, and we've talked a lot about, you know, being in the outdoors and so forth. What were some of your highlights of your outdoor time up here this summer? Or this winter, I'm sorry, this winter, yeah.
It's hard to pick just a few, but... one of my highlights was we was the Iditarod and Trailgate. That was such a fun celebration of surviving the Alaska winter, I think. Just to see everyone coming together at Trailgate specifically, and just celebrating and being all together and remembering, like, I think in the winter you can get a little isolated. And so remembering that, wow, there are so many people here and we're so happy to be together. And then just, I had never seen dog sled races or anything. So seeing all the dogs was really amazing too.
So Trailgate, what's Trailgate?
Trailgate is a party that I don't know who founded it, but it's been around for a while. And it's along the ceremonial start of the Iditarod, which goes through all throughout Anchorage. And it's just a gathering of people. They offer food and drinks, and you watch the dogs pass and you kind of hang out and celebrate together.
Celebrate the start of spring,
yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. Well, that's a lot of fun. So Trailgate, what, anything else? It's all about skiing,
yeah,
and
ice skating. I had a very fun ski trip where my friend and I skied to the Eagle River, to a yurt in the Eagle River Nature Center.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I remember it was so cold. And I don't remember exactly how cold it was, but neither of us had the right gear to be prepared for that cold. And the fire kept going out, and we were just up all night. And it was one of those things where, in theory, it would have been, like, it should have been a terrible night. We didn't sleep. We were cold. But it was just so beautiful outside, and we would go and look at the stars. And it was so magical and special that it didn't really matter that it was also somehow miserable. And so that was also a big highlight of my time here.
So that is sort of the definition of winter camping.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that it's sort of miserable.
Yeah.
It's a pretty special
because you're
thing.
Just outside.
Right. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, and the stars and everything. That's great. I guess, what were some of the challenges of this fellowship?
Yeah, I think the hardest part was actually April for me.
Interesting.
I really figured out ways to make the winter enjoyable, like that I previously mentioned. But I wasn't expecting how difficult April would feel, just because it was gray and I found it really hard. You couldn't really ski anymore. I mean, you could ski in Hatcher Pass, but it wasn't the same. But you couldn't quite go on hikes yet. It was breakup season, and I found it very hard to, like, I wanted it to be summer or winter, and I didn't like the in-between.
Right.
And that was challenging.
Yeah,
to get
it
outside.
It is the sort of the toughest time of year for a lot of people, that spring breakup time. Do you have recommendations for other, you know, applicants or fellows that are coming up? What would you recommend to them?
Yeah, I would recommend having an open mind and being really willing to fail at things. I think a lot of people who come into the fellowship are high achieving and perfectionistic. I know I certainly feel that sometimes, but because so much of my fellowship was trying new things, it was also failing at new things. I fell off the rock wall so many times. I fell down skiing. I made a fool of myself in Kincaid so many times. But yeah, just being willing to fail and fall and then get back up again. I learned a lot from that.
Well, you know, they say, you know, to be really good at something, you have to fall 10,000 times.
Yeah.
I Nina Kemple or Keegan Randall said that. To be an Olympic skier, you have to fall 10,000 times. I'm not quite sure about that, but I don't think those women fall a whole lot.
No.
But you do have to fall, and you have to laugh at yourself when you fall.
Yeah.
Right. And what is sort of next for you?
Yeah, so I'm not the best fellow to be interviewing, talking about young retention in Alaska, talent retention, because prior to my time here, I ended up taking the summer between college and my fellowship. I took an internship working in project development at a renewable energy company.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that that's really what I wanted to dedicate my career towards. I loved that job. And so I ended up I'm going back to work for them in Chicago in a couple weeks. And so coming back to Alaska when there's more opportunities for renewable energy is not off the table, but right now I want to go to Chicago and pursue that job.
Yeah, there's some amazing stuff going on up here. Renewable Energy Alaska Project is an amazing, amazing program. I want to pivot back to you, Tina, a little bit here about some of the other areas and you're sort of focused in Anchorage, but there are programs elsewhere in Juneau and Sitka and Fairbanks, is that right? So describe some of the, things that are going on in those, what the fellows are doing there, either in the outdoors or as part of their work.
There are three other sites besides Anchorage, and I think one of the really neat things about the program is we do span kind of a large swath of Alaska, so you have so much geographic variation, and I think that surprises fellows when they come into the program also, just how far it is between Fairbanks and Sitka and how very, very different different it can be. And that's also part of the reason that we do the opening convening in Fairbanks, so that everyone comes to the interior and kind of gets that experience. And then we do the closing in Juneau, so everyone, the Fairbanks and Anchorage fellows get to experience the southeast environment and kind of that temperate rainforest. But because of that, like the outdoor experiences vary quite a bit between the different sites. Sitka this year, I know, was super into cold plunges. They were doing
them every day
or several times a week, which not really a Fairbanks thing. And less snow makes the hiking season a lot longer in a lot of those communities. Though I can't say less snow in Juneau this year, as they got absolutely just buried under snow this year. But a lot of the Southeast stuff where it's so very ocean and water-based, which is so very different than interior, where a lot like Anchorage, there's a lot of cross-country skiing and cabin trips and just those type of winter adventures that you imagine. Fairbanks also has one of the perks of being a Fairbanks fellow is you get access to the Student Rec Center at UAF. So they all get gym memberships, which I know they really, really value for making it through the long, dark, and this year very cold Fairbanks
super
winter.
Super cold winter, up there.
Yeah. I would say this year's Fairbanks crew probably got more into the gym than skiing, though they were very into skiing.
I think they should get a badge or something. I mean, they had like 40 days of minus 40 up there. It was really, really cold winter.
Yeah, totally. So I think, very just different feels. Juneau almost always gets really into pub trivia. I know it's not necessarily an outdoor thing, but kind of an artifact of where their housing is located and the much more active downtown scene in Juneau. They often end up very engaged in the pub trivia scene and do very well. And Fairbanks this year had several musicians, and they participated in a lot of different jam sessions around town. So that's really the beauty of the program, is that every year is different and it really changes depending on who the fellows are and what their interests are. And that's part of what I do and the site coordinators that we have in each community really do, is learn about the fellows and help them get connected into what makes sense for them. Right. So if you're very into soccer, we can help connect you with a soccer league. But if you're very into making baskets or whatever, we'll connect you with the folk school so that you can work in that realm. So it's really adaptable for the communities that you're in and the fellows that are in the community.
And you must feel like a sort of an aunt or a mom with all these students. And so how do you prepare them for the Alaska? Is there training of sorts for the outdoor stuff, or is it just sort of go have fun and cross your fingers?
I mean, a little bit of a learning by trial, you know, like how most of us have learned how to get outside. There's some pre-reading that fellows do at over the summer before they start the program. And it's some history about the state, you know, trying to understand the indigenous context and kind of Angsa and Anilka and all of that part that really influences kind of the politics of the state. And then we usually have a Zoom session around a little bit of outdoor safety, very focused on hypothermia and water management. So, because that'll be what gets you in trouble in the winter is getting wet and then getting cold. So we could probably do more. I'm always looking for more guest speakers or more opportunities to get fellows into courses. You know, we have one fellow that this last year she worked with the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association. So she was a great resource for marine safety information for the Sitka cohort that was there. We really try to do as much as we can, and we're always trying to do more.
What a great program. Well, very good. Thank you very much. We've been talking about the Alaska Fellows Program, and we've had Tina Buxbaum with us, who's the executive director. Amelia Lamont was with me in the studio, and then Cameron Umack was on the program earlier. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. Tobin Shelby is its producer, and the program is edited by Ammon Swenson and Crystal Hyde. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed on the show are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can listen to Outdoor Explorer anytime at alaskapublic.org and in your favorite podcast app. If you have a question, comment, or a topic suggestion, email outdoorexplorer@alaskapublic.org.